She learned to be sensitive to the spiritual, emotional connection to the body at a very early age. Today, she practices yoga, pranayama, breathwork, meditation, herbalism, and Reiki. She is currently training in shamanism and believes in transpersonal medicine, or the interconnectedness of humanity. In this episode, she explains a powerful experience she had while being treated with Reiki and how it changed how she views patients. She gives a detailed explanation of the chakras and the school of Reiki. Enjoy this conversation as we learn about the energy fields of the body. Well, it's August 12th, Saturday morning. We've got our cup of coffee and we're ready to start the podcast. This is episode 89 of the Osteopathic Manipulative Medicine Podcast, where we share clinical stories and pearls related to osteopathic medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ben Green, a third-year osteopathic neuromusculoskeletal medicine resident at Michigan State University. Our guest this morning is a fourth-year osteopathic medical student at Virginia College of Osteopathic Medicine, and she is from rural Louisiana. She is passionate about practicing transpersonal medicine, which goes beyond the biopsychosocial model of addressing patients in a context of multiple interactive systems, and focuses on connecting to people without expectations or judgment to be present for their wholeness. She is interested in integrating healing modalities such as OMM, yoga, pranayama, breathwork, meditation, herbalism, and Reiki into holistic, patient-centered care as a future physician. She is a 200-hour yoga instructor, Reiki level 3 practitioner, and is currently training in the foundations of core shamanism while attending osteopathic medical school. She is an advocate for change in the current Western model of healthcare. She describes herself as goofy, loving, lifelong learner. Her hobbies include gardening, singing, writing poetry, hula hooping, and traveling. Welcome to the podcast, Madison Lambert.
Good morning, Dr. Green. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm super happy and excited to hear what you have to tell us about your journey to medical school and how you became interested in all these different holistic approaches to the person. I mean, yoga, breathwork, Reiki, training in shamanism. So yeah, I'm excited to learn from you.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I guess I'll start with how I got interested in hands-on healing, if we'll call it that.
Before you get into that, Madison, we'd really like to hear what kind of books and documentaries and
yes,
you can tell us about your hula hooping and singing.
Absolutely. Okay. So I've always been a singer since I was a young child. Like, I just loved music. My mom always sang to me. We always joke because my mom went to see a concert with me when she was 39 weeks pregnant, and she went into labor like right after going to see Elton John. So I like to think that that was my first concert, because
Elton John, he kind of like induced your mom, huh?
Basically. So both of my parents are just very musical people. My dad's a jazz saxophone player, musician. My mom is a singer. My grandparents on both sides were singers and piano players. Like, it's just deep in my genes to love music. And so that's been a love of mine since I was a young child. And so I love to sing. I love to play flute. I was in the marching band in high school. And so that's always been infused as like a passion of mine. It helped me open up my creativity as a child and like be interested in the arts. It was my escape from some stress in life. I didn't have the easiest childhood, but I had a very loving environment.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And you love to sing karaoke. We were talking about that the other day.
I do. I'm a huge musical theater nerd, choir, all things performance. Like, that is one of my big hobbies. And so if I had a book recommendation, something that I've been interested in recently is in shamanism. I just started a course on it. And there's a book called Spirited Medicine, Shamanism in Contemporary Healthcare. And it's a compilation of essays from different practitioners across the healthcare field, ranging from counselors to physicians to massage therapists. And so it's looking at incorporating shamanism in the transpersonal model of care, which is kind of that patient-centered wholeness. And Cecile Carson is fantastic. She's a retired, currently MD physician that studied family medicine and psychiatry and came into shamanism. And she, I connected with her in Louisiana on a whim. She had an office and a dance studio, and I went to take a class with my partner for fun. And she happened to have an office in the back, and I was like, what is that? And I just so happened to meet her through her business card along her desk. And so that's how we connected. So I look at things in a very like spiritual perspective of like people come into your life exactly when they need to. And that's kind of how I live my life, is just being open to different connections with people and how that influences patient-centered care. Just kind of like looking at people on a deeper level. Yeah. And that book helps incorporate that perspective across all fields of medicine. So I really appreciate that.
That's neat. That's a neat way to go about your day-to-day life. I think it probably keeps you very in the present moment.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. What about a documentary or movie recommendation?
You know, I don't really watch television too much. I do really enjoy documentaries. I'm a big science fiction fantasy person. So, of course, Harry Potter and things like that. One of my favorite TV series is called The Magicians. So if you're into, you know, wizardry and magic and those kinds of things, like it's a really good TV show. I think it ended too soon. So it does end on like a strange note, but like it's based on these books. And so the books are fantastic. But the show's really good too. So, you know, that would be a second book recommendation is The Magician series and that TV show. Another favorite of mine is Cloud Atlas, which is also a novel that was turned into a movie. And the movie has Tom Hanks in it. It's really good.
Great. What was the name of that again, Madison?
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas. Okay. Let's check that out. You began speaking a little bit about how you got into hands-on treatment, hands-on medicine. So if you want to go into that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so from an early age, I was given some significant responsibility in taking care of family members. My great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and I all lived in the same household. And my great-grandmother had early onset Alzheimer's and dementia around her late 50s, early 60s. She had a pretty significant fall with a head injury that kind of triggered her like having rapid onset dementias. And so my grandmother began to take care of her. And so my mom and I helped as well. And so from like age probably 7 or 8, I was going with them to all the doctor's appointments, you know, learning how to, you know, help her take her medications at certain times and feeding her, you know, all the way through the end of her life care. I sang at her funeral when I was, you know, she passed away when I was like 12, I believe. And so my family was very deeply connected in matriarchy and caregiving. We didn't, not necessarily like we could have probably had access to maybe like a nursing home or something, you know, through Medicare, but we just believe strongly in taking care of our family members. And so we were very hands-on, making sure that, you know, my great grandmother had everything she needed while she was, you know, essentially losing her mind and all of her loved ones. You know, we were always there for her. We all sang together and joked. You know, they all loved to sing hymns. My great grandmother was Christian Scientist, and so she believed in like the hands-on healing through the power of God. She was a very faithful woman. She always sang hymns by Mary Baker Eddy, who's like one of the founding practitioners of Christian Scientist. And so it was a very interesting influence in my family. Her daughter, my grandmother, was Catholic. And so my mom was kind of raised between this like Christian Science, like faith-based healing, you know, side, as well as, you know, the Catholic Church. And so I grew up saying, you know, prayers and singing. And my mother actually had a caregiver in home, like a live-in nanny. And this was in, you know, the early 50s through 60s. Her caregiver was a Haitian Creole African-American woman, you know, direct descendant from immigration of slaves and the Creole French heritage into New Orleans, Louisiana. You know, there's so much rich, steep culture there of, you know, cultures from Cajun French Nova Scotia to Scottish Americans, you know, all this foundational history of jazz. Like, it's just a beautiful culture. And so I grew up with that influence. So my mom's nanny actually passed on something to her called, in the Louisiana tradition, a traiteur. And traiteur translates into treater. And that's what they called people who healed by placing their hands on someone's body and saying specific prayers passed down verbally. A lot of them involved Catholic prayers like the Hail Mary and Our Father, incorporated with certain rituals that were, it's an interesting mix. You know, French heritage is very deeply mixed with like voodoo and hoodoo culture. And so certain, like burning certain herbs or, you know, specific ailments, like let's say a sprained ankle or a headache, had different prayers and, you know, different songs that were associated with that specific ailment. And my mom learned from her, you know, nanny, these things that really were getting lost around that time, because this was the immigration time. My mom was the first class to integrate Black and white, you know, schools in the 1960s. And so it was such a powerful time to be a part of that. My mom is just innately gifted. And so it's an interesting background to think about. And that's kind of how I was exposed to that early on. My mom would treat me for my headaches as a kid. You know, if I fell and hurt my knee, she would put like a poultice of herbs on it and pray, you know, over it. There were times where I didn't have access to care as a kid. Like I got bit by a cat and my hands swelled up really big. My mom was like, oh, you know, like we'll pray on it. Well, like it was infected. There are limitations to what prayer can do, you know? And so, it's interesting now looking back on it as a osteopathic student, how my family is very reluctant to trust modern medicine. And we'll go like days without access to care and like tough it out because, you know, we've gone without insurance. And it's just, you know, it's an interesting, steeped with like deep faith and yep. spirituality, you know? And so that's how I came into that. medicine just spoke to me because of all the hands-on like exposure that I had. And
yeah,
you know,
that's such an interesting background. So your mother's nanny was trained in this school of medicine, which was faith-based / hands-on healing, and passed that on to your mother. And this was a school of medicine that came from France?
So it's not even like a school the way you could think of it. So let me say.
Or is this just like I don't know. Frontier medicine? I don't know. Like, did this just develop in like the faith communities? Or
so when Creole and Haitian people settled in New Orleans, they brought the practice of voodoo mm-hmm. which were these, I mean, there's lots of lineages, just like, you know, all cultures have like a shamanistic faith-based core practice. You can look across Native American cultures to Aztec, Mayan,
definitely
Scottish Celtic culture. Like there's like a mystic and a shaman, and someone who like addresses the spiritual aspects of care in a faith-based way. Whatever deity that culture may practice. And so in voodoo, they have, you know, different saints and gods that they pray to. There's different ritualistic practices. So when Haitians, slaves, you know, African slaves were brought into New Orleans, they continued to have those practices with the settlers that were in New Orleans. They're, you know, their cultures were steeped together. And so it developed this interesting mix of like Catholic prayer to blend, where they couldn't quite practice their true culture. And so, I don't know, there's a lot to it, you know, but this melded, this faith-based practice of like ritual work, dancing, prayers, poultices, herbal medicine. There's a specific way that traiteurs pass down their prayers. Usually it has to be passed down from a male to a female or a female to a male. Usually it's not from like directly. I think it's like the second male born, and there's like all these weird rules to like how some people will transfer it down. And so the practice would get lost if you followed that guideline. But basically it's like passed down verbally, these specific prayers. It's not really written down. And you can only share it in a certain specific ritualistic way. It's very interesting if you look at it. I have something saved to share with you about like how it's passed down, but Reiki is very similar in that aspect. Like some of the practices of Reiki, it's like four qualities essentially.
But before you get into that, Madison, can I just ask you, like your mom, why do you think she took to this practice of spiritual healing, traiteur practice? What was it about it that captivated your mom? Because it sounds like that has greatly influenced you in turn.
Right. So I think it aligned well with what my mom was experiencing from her faith influences. So Christian Scientists are very, they believe that through God, all healing is possible. Like self-healing is basically being totally connected with God and trusting him or her, you know, whatever you look at God as, across different cultures, you know, but that's that firm foundational belief that like faith can heal all if you just trust and believe. It goes back to that, like, you know, power of the mind, power of the human body, power of faith in God to heal. So it's like that trust in God. And so she grew up with those types of prayers and beliefs. And believe that they're a vessel for healing, right? They channel God or love or light, however you want to look at it. And you're in the traiteur tradition, you're never supposed to thank the person, the treater, because they didn't do the healing. They're just a vessel for the healing to occur. And it's, you know, again, that foundational belief that God heals all. And just being able to trust it and let the power flow through you, through your hands. It's like tapping into that bioenergetic field that is God that unites all of us. Like, I think my mom and I connect very deeply in that way. And like the power of the mind and the power of God, you know, so that's kind of just deep in us. I don't know how to explain it. Like, it just feels like a calling. My mom is very empathic and like has a deep inner knowing. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful that she like instilled that in me at a young age.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm curious where her lack of faith in Western medicine, where does that come from?
So part of it is just this distrust in rural communities that don't have access to care. It's like, when you have to make do, you know, you do what you can to just survive. It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? You need food and shelter and comfort, and those are the foundational things of developing. And when you're barely surviving, you just have to make do. And sometimes you can't get to the doctor when they're an hour away, or you don't have a car, or, you know, you're too much in chronic pain from osteoarthritis to even get up and get out of bed to like go somewhere. You know, like that's the kind of things that my family had to deal with. And so we just helped each other through that pain and, you know, did what we could. And not having access to care, you just make do. And so that, based in faith, I don't really understand it completely about, you know, why my mom is how she is. There's, you know, there's a lot to dig in there.
Right. But
to give you some perspective, like, I remember when I was very little, my mom and my stepdad got into a car accident, and my mom went to the hospital, right? And they told her she fractured her pelvis. And then she was like, oh, okay, well, my family member has a wheelchair, so I'm just going to sign out AMA. Like, she refused surgery and PT and just went home and like dealt with it.
And how did it turn out?
You know, she has chronic pain now, but she gets around okay. And like, she's such a strong person. Like, she's very, she lives very deeply in her mind. And I feel like with chronic pain, some of the ways, or, you know, chronic emotional pain or physical pain, people cope with that by like, you know, faith or the mind, or dissociating from the pain in their body. And sometimes, you know, they get too wrapped up in their mind. Maybe that's like the root of dementia, you know? And so I don't know, it's just a very interesting outlook. Like, I don't really understand it all the way of like why people are so resistant to go to the doctor, but it's like, maybe it's easier to ignore like all of these things that are wrong and just live the best you can when you're just trying to get your basic needs met, you know? And maybe you don't have the capacity to do more than that. You just work with what you're given.
So if I could ask you, Madison, if you were with your mom at that time in the hospital when she got the diagnosis of a broken pelvis, what would your conversation look like with your mother? Let's say you were in your current state, a fourth year osteopathic medical student, you're with your mom, broken pelvis, she wants to leave AMA. What would you do? What would you tell her?
You know,
I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but I'm genuinely curious.
It's so interesting to think about, because, you know, as a medical student, you learn all these protocols of like, this is how you handle this situation clinically, how, you know, you have to go through like, okay, is she stable? Is she unstable? Does she have a bleed? Does she not have an abdominal bleed? Like, does she need surgery immediately? Those kinds of things. But also just like from the osteopathic perspective of like, how much pain is she in? How bad is the fracture? Like, is, you know, are her hips mobile? Are they completely immobile? Like, I don't know. I just, there's so many things to think about, but I often think about how much pain she must have been in. And how now every day she has to live with that experience of like that trauma. And so it's embedded in her body and it becomes part of her experience of like, well, now I'm just in pain all the time and I just have to live with it. And like, maybe it would have been different if she had like further medical care, and maybe it wouldn't have, but she's gotten by just fine. Like, you know, she's very tough. So it's like, I admire her, but I just wonder like what made her choose to have to go through that much pain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's, gosh, I need to bring your mom on the podcast now.
She's a beautiful person. She's like this little fairy. I love her.
It sounds like, and that's so cool that you have that profound connection with your mom on such a deep level, like a spiritual resonance with her. That's awesome. That's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very lucky to have her. She's a hard-headed, strong, powerful woman. And so she had, you know, and that's like a long line of women in my family. And so it was very influential that, like, even though things weren't easy, like, you know, we had our struggles and our traumas, you know, I had a rough childhood. Like, my mom coped with what the things she went through with alcohol. And so did a lot of my family members. I was exposed to, like, just a lot of heavy stuff early on, but I always had this deep guiding light of, like, faith that I would get through whatever it was if I just trusted in the process. And that's gotten me very far. And I think that was what was instilled, you know, that's what sparked my interest in medicine, where it's like, I have this strong urge to just heal myself so that I can be a vessel of healing for others. And no matter what that takes, you know, no matter what I've been through, that's always been like my goal in life that helps me get through the darkest of times, is just to like share that light with others. Because if I can get this horrible traumatic experience and feel like, you know, this depression and anxiety and disconnect from my body and like work through it and find the tools that help me do it so that I can help others do the same thing. Like, that's how we lift each other up. So that's what I live for.
Yeah. I think that's so cool and so powerful. I think that religion, whether you believe in God or you don't, as a phenomenon in our world, I think that for many people that are believers, that do have faith in a higher power and influence of this higher power in our day-to-day lives, I think that it can be an incredible beacon of hope and meaning amidst a lot of suffering and a lot of things that are unexplainable. You know what I mean? When you're going through the hardships and the grind of the day-to-day and the trauma of day-to-day and betrayal, maybe by people that you love or whatever it may be, the thousands of things that make life challenging, faith can give so much hope and so much meaning. And I think people that have chronic pain, it might be that when we talk about the mind, body, spirit, it might be filling up that spiritual aspect of the persona so much that they can still have an incredible quality of life. And I think that's one of the powers of faith and for some people, not for everybody, but for some people.
Absolutely. And it means different things to different people.
That's right. It definitely does.
But it's like this golden thread that connects us all. Like, I thought, mm-hmm. Spirit, you know, it like transcends all of those. It's like the thread that connects everything. So we have these different ways of looking at people, you know, like the biomechanical, you know, aspects of things and injuries and body mechanics and the emotional aspect of things that people experience and how that affects their body. The spirit, which is like this overlying thread, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
To look at people through that lens of like their suffering and how that connects us all. Like, that's transpersonal, you know, it's like what unites us is our suffering, but also our ability to overcome that suffering by like truly seeing each other. Like, that's to me, like my life passion is doing that through medicine. Like, whatever medicine means to you, if that's narrative medicine or, you know, osteopathic medicine or allopathic medicine, like, I don't know, they're all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, yeah, I think you're wise beyond your years. I think that it's, as humans, I think we tend to tribalism at times. You know, I'm Catholic, you're Muslim, I'm Methodist, you're Latter-day Saints, you know, and that's our community. And I think it's easy to maybe isolate ourselves in our community. But you're right. I think suffering does bind us together because we all suffer. I mean, everybody gets up in the morning, you know, that's not easy. But beyond that, there's so much deeper levels of suffering that can unite us for sure. So you talk about wanting to unite people through medicine, and it sounds like through hands-on medicine, shamanism, yoga, Reiki. Do you want to go into that a little bit? And specifically, I think we were going to talk a little bit more about how you became interested in Reiki, and we were going to try to delve into that topic and understand Reiki a little bit more deeply, because I really don't know much about it, and I'm very interested in learning from you about it.
Sure. So my first experience with Reiki was as a freshman in college. I was 18 or 19 years old, and at the time I was delving into yoga through free college classes at University of Lafayette, and I was just trying to find myself, and yoga helped me connect back into my body at a time where I was so stuck in my mind. I had so much depression and anxiety and all these things from my childhood that I was trying to process. And it was stored in my body. Like, I was in chronic pain. I felt trapped. Like, yoga helped me come back into my personal strength. And an important part of yoga is the breath, which is known as pranayama. So the body is the asana and the breath is the pranayama. And those two things blend together to help people connect more into their body in a sacred way. And yoga helped me break through my depression and my anxiety. And when I learned about Reiki, it just made sense. It was like connecting that emotional layer to how it manifests in the body. And one of my friends did Reiki on me, and I didn't really understand exactly what it was at the time, but I just knew that it was powerful. And you know, he placed his hands about 5 inches from my body at these specific points for about 3 minutes each. And while he did this, I entered like a deep meditative state. You know, I just breathed and tried to be present and focused on how it felt to just be present in my body and experience whatever was happening, being completely open to it. And I couldn't even explain what was happening. Like, I started having all these emotions come up when he placed his hands over different places. And I had this vision of myself just like dancing in the rain. And it was like this cathartic, like, thunderstorm in my mind. I had never seen anything like it. Like, it felt like I was hallucinating. And I just saw it so strongly of just like dancing in the rain and like just breathing through this like horrible urge to run and just be present. And I felt this huge release in my body and I just cried, but I wasn't exactly sad. I was just like, wow, overwhelmed by this feeling of being a human, you know, and integrating all of this trauma and where it was in my body. And after the experience was over, it was like 30 minutes of, you know, him placing his hands over different places in my body that correspond to like energy centers, which we'll get into. And we talked through the experience. And so he described to me something that he saw in his mind. And it was exactly what I saw while he was placing his hands over my body. He said he saw this massive thunderstorm and I was just in the middle of it. And he just like sat there with me while I cried. And it helped me process a lot of what I was going through. And without yoga and that experience, I don't think I could have fully integrated at that time. and it helped me get through a lot of the darkness I experienced to fully be able to open up as like a lifelong learner, because I was so triggered all the time that I couldn't take any more information in, and it allowed me to just like process and be myself. And so I was fascinated by it, and I wanted to learn everything I could about all these modalities that I was getting into so that I could help others. So fast forward a few years, I connected with other people that were interested in this in my community. And one of them was Francine Guillory. She's trained in shamanism, and she actually was a Catholic nun for like 15 years and then left the church to study shamanism and become a trained in the Lakota tradition of shamanism and a healer in that way. And she became a mentor to me, and she's like a grandmother, you know, like a great teacher of wisdom, in her 80s now. And she taught me Reiki. There's three levels to it. And so we connected over many years so that I could train and learn from her in this practice. And there's different lineages, but I believe they all are connected by this common thread of passing down a tradition of prayers or symbols or intuition, channeling through the hands on someone's body to help them heal in whatever way they need to, in whatever way that spirit is calling them to, or God, or whatever you want to call it. Like, that's what Reiki is to me.
So I want to go back to your experience of Reiki, because it sounds like that experience that you had with your friend sparked a profound interest in learning more about this healing modality. And I think you said some really interesting things about your experience. And one of those was the experience of being present in your body. And that's really profound. That might sound so simplistic, but I think that is such a profound statement, because if we really think about our lives, and I think about my own life, most of my day is spent outside of my body. Well, what does that mean? It's like my mind, I'm not habituating, I'm not habitating in my body. I am thinking about the patients that I'm seeing, the patients that I'm treating, and that's, you need to do that, right?
But,
but I'm thinking about, oh, what am I going to do after work? Oh, I'm going to go for a run. Am I going to swim? What am I going to eat for dinner? Oh, I got to pick up the kids. Oh, no, my significant other is upsetting me. You know, thousands of things. But I'm not, like, you spent 30 minutes living, habituating, experiencing your body. And I think that can be, for so many people, including myself, an extremely powerful experience. You know, I try to meditate every morning for at least 10 minutes, and it's such a grounding experience.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to worry about anything else, or I need to rush to the clinic to get things ready for the anatomy course that starts at 7 a.m. I'm just like, no, just be present, live in your body, experience your body, and just be. And wow, that's such a grounding, powerful experience. I don't know how else to say that, but our day to day, we're just pulled away from living in our body by I think social media oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate you sharing that experience and talking about how you integrated these emotions, possibly these traumatic emotions that were stored in your body, that were able to come out and you were able to process because you took the time and you faced those emotions by being present in your body.
Absolutely.
That's fascinating to me.
Same. And it's, there's so many layers to it. You know, it's like, how deep do you want to go? You know, it can be a beautiful experience to like, finally, it's like a fresh breath of air when you settle in. And it's when you have that moment of just living in your body. But for so many people, that can be excruciating on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know, with chronic pain or, you know, barely getting by because you're working 60 hours a week, 7 days a week, you know, supporting multiple children. Maybe you're a single mom. Like, you know, how excruciating can that be sometimes to just sit there for 30 minutes? Oh my God, that's a long time. So even just 10 minutes a day is like, wow, that's hard to just sit still in the culture that we live in and how fast-paced it is. And I'm so thankful to have had access to those things that helped me be present in my body at an early age so that I can work through those things, and, you know, heal from injuries because my body's in a state to accept healing, you know, reduce inflammation or, you know, afford the groceries that are of good quality to like sustain my body in a nurturing way. Like, not everybody has those things. So I don't know, just looking at people from meeting them where they are is so important in their body. And so that means something different to everyone. But if I can help them just like get grounded in their own body, regardless of like what that means to them, then that's like making an impact in a profound way. And like, that's just, that's what I live for.
Yeah, absolutely. So right. A lot of people with chronic pain want to run away from their body. They wish they had a different body. And so to be present in their body is very, can be very scary because they don't understand why they're in so much pain. So I think that in OMM, it's a privileged specialty to help integrate someone in their body. I really do, because we do, people think that we primarily do body work. I think it's so much more than that, but working through the body with your manual treatments can be a access point to the spirit, to the mind, and to integrating someone back into their body. And you know, that sounds strange, but I really believe that. And trying to create a sense of not only acceptance, but belief that I have health. I am strong. I can overcome this. And that entails now that you've ruled out, you know, other structural problems that could be causing their pain, you know, all the things that we know, the osteoarthritis, the rheumatoid arthritis, the herniated disc, the facet arthritis, you know, the radicular symptoms, all that's been ruled out. And we have arrived to the diagnosis of this is possibly mechanical back pain. We know it's much more than that. But yes, I think that OMM is a great field to help people integrate back into their bodies.
Right. And there's something called embodiment. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
So embodiment practices are those that help people integrate into their body. And so meditation, yoga, OMM, ecstatic dance, practice that is integrating like the body and the neuromuscular system with conscious control and like joy and just pure movement and bliss, like any of those practices, bodies, you know, it's all an embodiment practice. And I think that no matter Tai Chi, whatever that is that helps people connect with their body, like finding that it and just being able to be present in it, hula hooping, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so yeah, I think that there's multiple ways to get to the root of things, right? And so as practitioners of medicine, like I think a lot of us are motivated by that. It's like, what is the root cause? Mm-hmm. And, for me, the thing that unites us all is that we're human beings in this lived experience. Is just to have like the cleanest, purest experience possible. And that's never going to be the same thing to any one person because we're all in this subjective experience. Like whatever you can do to help someone integrate their suffering into their lived experience, that's what unites medicine. And so I think Reiki does a really good job of like zooming out and like letting go of that control of being human and just being present. It's a good way to tie everything together for me. Like that's, it's like a deep part of my life now because of being an osteopathic medical student, like you're constantly putting your hands on people. And so there's all these like subtle proprioceptive, like, senses that we develop, and Reiki is just like another layer to that, of feeling through someone else's emotional body or spiritual body. Would you like to talk about the lens of Reiki and like how those energetic fields work? Is that something we can talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about it.
Okay. So Reiki essentially is a combination of two Japanese words, Rei, which means God's wisdom or higher power, and Ki, which means life force energy. So Ki is the life force energy that animates all living things. Essentially, it's like spiritually guided life force energy. And the Reiki lineage, it's taught according to Japanese tradition of a teacher passing down knowledge to a student through something called an attunement. And just like you would tune an instrument, it's this initiation ceremony when this knowledge is passed down through ritual as and thoughts to help a student open up these energy channels, right? And so it's facilitating this flow of energy through a ritualistic practice of like passing down these symbols through different energy centers in the body. Any damage that's occurred through stress or injury or disease, Reiki is the attunement to the natural healing process. Optimize the body's ability to receive healing. And so there's different ways to look at these energy centers across different cultures. If you look at Chinese medicine, there's meridians, that are followed in acupuncture, these energy lines that correlate to the organs and different systems in the body. Reiki follows similar to Ayurvedic or Indian practices of looking at these energy centers, chakras, which translates to wheels or wheels of light. The chakras align with seven points in the body that correspond to the glands. It's really nice to look at a picture of a human body, and you can even Google like chakras, C-H-A-K-R-A. The first one aligns with the base of the spine, the root chakra. It correlates to the color red. If you look at a prism in the order of the colors that align, so it's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. Red is the root chakra or the base. And it corresponds to a person's foundation, their connection with their deepest self, like the umbilical cord, you know, like the purest like essence of that person is in the root, right? Let me see. I have something I want to share.
How did they come up with these chakras?
So this is like, if you look at, so Sanskrit texts like the Bhagavad Gita or these original like thousands of year old texts of healing, like Indian culture was describing these centers of the body, which corresponded to certain diseases or ailments. I think it was a perception that's been lost over time because our culture focuses on evidence-based medicine so much, and it's hard to quantify like a certain type of inner knowing or feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, it transcends like what we can see with our eyes. And so it's hard to even describe, but like, it's like a pattern. It's like pattern recognition, right? And before we had all these distractions of computers and, you know, it's beautiful that we're all so intimately connected through social media. And like, I can make a friend across the world and then go fly on a plane and visit them and have this incredible connection. But we get so lost in it day to day because it's so readily accessible that we lose our ability to see the overarching patterns of, let's say, nature and our living on a planet that has influences of the sun and the moon on the tides and the weather and, you know, all these things that humans used to connect with so much more deeply before we had distractions. I think the bioenergetic field is accessible to those who are willing to lose those distractions and connect to like the core of their being. And that's really hard to fathom. So it's hard to conceptualize that, but it's like that inner knowing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I trust in faith a lot, but also in the literature. And like, there's a reason that these things occur across multiple cultures and healing processes. And so I kind of look at that in an overarching lens, and Reiki just puts that together. And so,
yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. You know, these chakras, the Bhagavad Gita has been around for thousands and thousands of years and has been helping generation after generation. That's why it's still around. People find value in it. If it wasn't valuable, it wouldn't exist. So I think you're right. Even though we might not be able to quantify it, like a double-blind placebo-controlled study doesn't necessarily mean that there is not value here. Exactly. Not healing value. So...
So let's see. Okay, ADD here. We were talking about different chakras. So let's go through a brief arc of like where each chakra is and what it stands for. So the root chakra is at the base of the spine, and its functions essentially are to give vitality to the physical body. It's the life force, the basis of survival, self-preservation, like your gut instincts. It aligns the adrenal glands, kidneys, colon, legs, and bones. So when people have problems with these organs, you can look at it correlating to their root chakra or the base. So it's like that transpersonal approach, right? Looking at how these things intertwine. And in that person's life, the root chakra represents matters relating to the material world, the physical body, the mastery of the physical body, grounding. If you think about it, it's at the base of the spine. If you were to grow roots there, you would be, you know, grounding. That would give you stability, security. So if you move up, the next chakra is the sacral plexus, which is right at the navel.
Sorry, Madison, if I could just interrupt you there. With the root chakra, you talked about it being the life force. I feel like so many of the manual therapists, or manual healthcare providers, physicians, non-physicians,
have clinicians.
Clinicians have talked about the same thing, maybe in different words, or maybe not even different words. Like Dr. Fulford talked about life force, talked about the life force of the human body and freeing the life force through osteopathic manipulation. Treating these areas of restriction in the body where the life force can't flow through freely. And so, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because there's some overlap here.
Oh, absolutely. It's like the overarching lens, you know. It's so beautiful how all these systems are connected, and, you know, you can call it different things, but they all kind of are based in this foundation of the life force, you know, and different ways of tapping into that.
Right. So sorry, you're talking about the sacral chakra.
Yeah. So the sacral chakra, and also there's so many layers to this. So it's hard to say like where to start, but each chakra can also correlate to, there's a Sanskrit symbol for it, as well as a mantra or this pitch or syllable that can be hummed to tap into the energy of that chakra, or the color. So root is associated with red, right? So the navel chakra, the sacral plexus, is orange, and it's located in the lower abdomen, right around the navel area. And so the root chakra was, the element is earth. So this moves into the element of water. And so this corresponds to procreation, the reproductive organs, the processing of food, which gives you your physical life force and vitality, sexual energy. So the glands associated with the sacral plexus are the ovaries, testicles, prostate, genitals, spleen, the womb, so the uterus, and the bladder. And so this is like the processing of liquids in the body, again, that water-like quality, giving and receiving, ebbing and flowing of emotions, desires, pleasure, love, the processing of new ideas, healing, your personal relationship with health, your family, like elimination, being able to let go. and then working with creativity. Like your sacral chakra is the passion or creativity or sexual or sensual aspect of being able to connect with yourself and like experience pleasure. But it can have negative qualities as well. So if you look at it in a sense, each chakra can be balanced. It can be overactive or underactive. And so they all kind of work in balance. And whenever they're out of balance, someone who has, like, let's say, an overactive sacral chakra will be overindulgent in food or sex or, you know, jealousy. Like their, you know, desire turns into jealousy. They can have uterine or bladder problems, you know. So that's a way of looking at the sacral plexus. Do you want me to keep going on?
Yeah, keep going. Go through them. Sure.
So you move up to the solar plexus chakra, which is just above the navel, right below the chest. So kind of like at the base of the sternum. And its color is yellow. The element is fire. And this is essentially the sympathetic nervous system, digestive processes, metabolism. It corresponds to the pancreas, the adrenals, the stomach, liver, gallbladder, the diaphragm. And this is a person's center for their personal power, their ego, their mastery for self-control and desire. It's kind of like where your humor or your laughter resides. Think of like a big, deep belly laugh, you know. Your solar plexus is kind of like your personality and how you see yourself interacting with the world, how you digest information. So this has a lot to do with the digestion and fire in your body for metabolizing things, your stomach. This would be imbalanced in people who have like GERD or gastroparesis, you know, a decrease in that fire. Certain foods can influence this chakra. So if someone's eating a lot of alkaline foods, it may, you know, decrease some of those GERD-like symptoms to help get this solar plexus chakra back into alignment. Let's say it's overactive in someone, they may belch all the time or have trouble processing their anxiety. They may be a very anxious person.
So the chakra is not only it's an energy field that's related to specific organs. So is it the chakra that is influencing organs, or is it the organs influencing the chakras, or does that even matter?
It's kind of like the chicken or the egg, right? It's the visceral somatic and the somatovisceral. It's like how those things are connected. Let's see.
But as a Reiki provider or clinician, you are trying to influence the chakra to heal the viscera. Is that fair to say, or is that wrong?
So let's look at it and like so a metaphor would be like there's this hose, and just like we palpate different layers in the body of like, okay, there's a restriction here, and the fascia is pulling in this particular way, which is restricting the flow of movement or the flow of blood in the vascular system or the flow of lymph. So they have lymphedema. Reiki is like finding the kink in their energetic hose, the life force that connects all vital energy and organs in the body. And if you look at it like an oscillating center of light, like a wheel, you want it to be spinning in such a way that it's balanced with all the other wheels around it, like a cog. And if the gear isn't moving, then it needs a little oil. But if the gear is moving too much, then it needs to be tightened up a little. And so the hose or the energy centers, you know, you're kind of just balancing out the flow through them. And it manifests in different ways in each person's body. And so it's kind of tying in their physical symptoms. Let's say this person always has GERD and stomach pain. Let's say in their life, they're also in a job that they don't like because they have to mold themselves to be someone they don't truly enjoy being. Like, it doesn't fuel their life. So they're not very stable in their ego and like living their true passion. So they feel like cut off from their confidence. Like, so they're having trouble digesting who they are. They live in their anxiety and question, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I pleasing this person instead of being myself? They'll have, you know, a lot of belching or, you know, difficulty with digestion. I don't know how to, it's kind of like you see this overarching pattern to how people experience somatic problems based on their emotional experiences and how those things connect. And so eventually if that fire gets put out, then the next chakra will be affected, which is the navel chakra. So that person will experience constipation and difficulty feeling creative or impotent. You know, they don't really want to have sex. Like, they don't really have a sex drive. They have difficulty connecting with others around them, like their family, you know, or that they can go in the other direction completely. Like, they're constantly having diarrhea. They have a lack of self boundaries. They're giving their energy away to others. And so they don't ever feel like they have enough for themselves. They overwork. And, you know, it's just like a different lens of looking at the body through these energetic centers and how it connects.
Yeah. So as a provider, as a Reiki provider, can you learn to sense these chakras? Is this a gift, or can you learn how to do this?
I think anyone can learn how to do this. Now, I think some people will have an easier time dropping into it than others, but I think that it's an innate part of being human. And if someone is open enough to perceive and receive information, then they can tap into it. But it requires consistent effort and intention and being completely present and not having expectations, which can be very challenging.
Yeah, that is quite challenging. You mean the provider having expectations or the patient or both?
Well, especially the provider, being able to hold space for someone and letting, you know, getting yourself out of the way is very important. Like you said earlier, we get so wrapped up in what am I going to have for dinner and when am I going to go for my run, or shoot, I forgot to order my mom's birthday gift on Amazon. You know, I have to send this email. And then we remember, oh yeah, my hands are on this person's body and I am evaluating their reflexes, you know? And so we're flooded with thoughts. And so being able to like slow that down and just be present for that person and be like, oh, I'm touching this person's shoulder. I'm reading their facial expressions. Oh, they wince when I do that. They're probably in pain. But what kind of pain is that? Are they guarded? Or are they unguarded? Is this an old injury? Like, do I go to move this person in this way? And it doesn't cause them any pain at all, but clearly they cannot rotate and side bend to the left. So something is stuck there. Mm-hmm. What is it? You know, is that like how they processed an injury that stuck in their body and now that's their new normal? So they don't really associate pain with it. I don't know. I think that it takes a lot of intentional practice to tap into those things, but anybody can do it. And especially for the self, like that's why I initially got into Reiki, was just to understand these things in myself. Like I was suffering with all these, all this anxiety. And I use this as an example, because this is how I relate. Like I had really bad GERD. My throat was like burning all the time. Like, it was affecting my singing. My anxiety was affecting my performance in music in college. Like I had all this lack of self-confidence because of all the trauma I'd been through. I felt like I didn't belong in medicine. Like, who am I, this, you know, small town girl with all this trauma and abuse, like trying to enter a field of doctors who, you know, are generational physicians. Like, I don't know. I was so insecure, but Reiki helped me realize that like a lot of that was emotional and like I was storing it in my body. And so.
So was that your solar plexus chakra that was imbalanced?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the way that you can look at it, you know? And so for patients who have those issues, like you come in and you always find their diaphragm and their abdomen is tight and they have GERD. It's like, oh, that's a solar plexus issue.
So then talk to me about you as a Reiki provider. You find that tight diaphragm, you find GERD, you find anxiety. What do you do to put that solar plexus chakra back into balance?
So let's go through our normal process of like, as an osteopathic physician, how we assess someone when we palpate, right? So first we can look at it through a biomechanical lens of like, I assess the movement of their rib cage and it seems to be restricted. It feels tight here. Like when I press, it doesn't move well. I wonder if their diaphragm is tight because the diaphragm connects to the rib cage. And if you zoom out a little bit and just put your hands on that person's body, you can look at the TARC changes. You know, is it warm or cool to the touch? I think temperature is so important. And it's like one of the first things we learn in medical school is an osteopathic school of assessing is a TARC change. So the texture of that area, the temperature, the asymmetry, the range of motion. But temperature can tell you a lot of the vitality of that area. And especially if, you know, depending on acute versus chronic, like how long have they had this problem? If they've had acid reflux for, 10 years, they're going to be very restricted in their stomach. That inflammation is going to affect the organ's vitality, which, you know, translates out into the fascia, which causes the muscles around the abdomen to contract to protect the body, because it's in pain. And so if I contract all those muscles, I maybe lock that pain in a little bit so it doesn't spread to my chest or my back. And so, or it does expand to my back. It triggers my celiac ganglia to facilitate the spinal segment of, you know, T5. And now my back is tight because my stomach is inflamed, but I'm still having trouble processing my emotions. And so it tightens up a little bit more. Oh, I feel so queasy every time I think about the fact that I have to give this presentation because it requires me to be confident. And I just don't have that. Like my stomach hurts, you know, that kind of thing. And so you feel that in that person's body. Maybe it's acute, it's warm, it's inflamed, it feels puffy, it feels hot. You know, the temperature will be hot or cold based on the vitality of that organ. And so tapping into that and just being present with it. And before you even press, just putting your hands over that point and feeling, does this feel like it has vitality or not? Is this tissue just existing in a hyperactive state? Like, where is it at? Meet it where it's at. And then you palpate the skin and the fascia and the muscle and see how it moves. It's like the outmost layer of that connecting to that person's body.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think it's a great way to tap into the wholeness of the person. Not just look at the person from a tissue standpoint or tissue lens, but you're integrating in a very intricate way structural findings of asymmetry, tissue texture abnormalities, whether that's hot or cold tissue, tight or lax tissue, into their emotional state of self-identity, trust, anxiety, depression, lack of self-worth, trauma. And it's a very complex, it seems to me, but very potentially therapeutic way of looking at the person and dealing with the person and connecting with the person and helping them connect to their body.
Exactly. And that's like a very love-based approach. So that brings us to our next chakra, which is the heart chakra. And so that's kind of like how we connect with others. It's like the anchor of the self. And so being very loving and secure with yourself helps others experience that love. That's your glands of your thymus, your immune system, your heart, the very like life force blood that's pumping through you. It's associated with the color green. And it's like that divine unconditional love for forgiveness, compassion, understanding others, connecting with the oneness of life, like acceptance, openness, harmony, contentment. You know, it's the drum that beats through with you your entire life. It's the music that's always there to comfort you is your heart pumping, you know? And we think about how much heart disease there is in our current society. And how much we struggle to connect with others. That's like a heart chakra issue. But I think when we tap into that energy, sometimes, you know, things will come up while you're working on a person, like you're working on their thoracics, their chest, their, upper rib cage, and suddenly they bring up about the fact that they're taking care of their wife and, you know, they have to help her move and get around and do their exercises. And it's stressful. And it's like, I wonder if that's where that stress is stored in his body, is in the heart. It's, you know, he's seeing someone he loves suffer every day. And so he's like, that's emotional trauma. I'm going to store it in my thoracic spine and my left shoulder. And now my shoulder's a little bit higher on the left and my back kind of hurts in that area. And so now I'm storing that emotional trauma in the body so I don't have to process it as much. I can just push through in my everyday life. You know, like that's the heart chakra.
Yeah, that reminds me of that patient that we saw together the other day who's caregiver for his wife, and he keeps having that, you know, left-sided rib 7, rib 8 pain, and just nothing seems to make it better. I wonder if you know, that's what he's experiencing.
Right. You know, and then you look at like the connection between chakras. And so the heart sits above the solar plexus, right? So that's like our true essence of love and how we connect to others through like compassion versus like our identity of self. And so I think in the world that we live in, like being a caregiver is so hard. It takes you out of your identity, or it adds, you know, this, now you're not just yourself, you're also caregiver of this person. So now you have this responsibility, and almost like you lose part of yourself sometimes in these experiences. And so that affects your ability to receive love and give love. And so in between those, that's the thoracolumbar junction. And so if people have difficulty giving and receiving love and being comfortable in their self, they're going to store that tension in between those chakras. And so that's an energetic block. So that's like one way to look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you've got throat chakra.
Right. So like communication, that's the thyroid, speech, sound, the mouth, you know, how we take in information, the power of the spoken word, of creative expression, speech, truth, loyalty, you know, do you stand by your word? And, you know, so many people carry their burden in their shoulders and their neck. You know, we're constantly hunched over our computer or our phone or our work, and it closes off our throat. We're not like expressing ourselves. We're living less consciously through these like other things that aren't innately human. And so we lose our ability to express and breathe and release and be open with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I like this one, self-reflection, the third eye chakra.
Yeah, third eye is one of my favorites. So that's like right in the center of your forehead, and it correlates to your pineal gland. And so that's in your pituitary gland, excuse me. And it's like right in the base of the sphenoid. And so, you know, looking at cranial, there's like a whole nother lens when you look at like the chakras and the glands and how the structure affects function in all these places. But that's the seat of the soul. Place where a person's insight or intuition, imagination comes from, like clairvoyance, this inner knowing. And sometimes if your third eye is too open, you're like kind of someone who lives in you know, people who are out of touch with reality, or they're spacey, they have a lack of concentration. It's also correlated with the amygdala. So people who live in fear or have PTSD, tension, headaches, eye problems, people who are like overly detached from the world have like a super closed off third eye.
Interesting. And then the last chakra, the crown chakra, self-knowledge.
Yeah. So the crown is interesting. So if you look from top to bottom, you know, you correlate up with the root to the crown. And so if the root was like grounding, the crown is like connecting purely with the outside world around you. It's like the opening to all of them. I don't know, the crown is like the, you know, the coronation or the halo. It's like the overarching like energy that a person is. And so like how they express that and are able to connect with the world around them.
Interesting. Yeah, these are so fascinating. I feel like you could just write a book about every single one of these chakras and go into it. And I'm sure
there's so many layers. It's incredible. And like, there's so much literature out there. You know, I'm traveling at the moment, so like, I'm not at home with my library, but I have so many books that I have yet to even crack the surface of on like how these things connect and like, just different modalities of looking at these patterns within the body, whether it's a somatic dysfunction or a blocked chakra or a meridian that's like, you know, not flowing well. Like, there's so many different ways to look at how these things connect in the body.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate you sharing or explaining the chakras and explaining how it correlates to somatic dysfunction. I think that was really very, very helpful. Anything else, Madison, that you wanted to share?
Yeah, so I think, this is a lot to conceptualize for most people. And it's like, well, how can you say that all these things are connected and like that, you know, the heart chakra is green and, you know, whatever, like, if it helps give it like an image that someone can like connect to, then that's what's important, because we all connect in different ways. And the best way to start off doing that is to just like practice being present in your body. And you'll really surprise yourself at like how much you can actually feel when you're able to connect through whatever embodiment practice that is for you. It's hard to sit and meditate for 10 minutes a day. Like, if you're not able to do that, then that's okay. Like, sit with yourself for 3 or 4 breaths and see how that feels, just to breathe consciously in your body. And once you're able to bring your awareness, you know, out of the mind and into the experience of what's happening in your body, you can really surprise yourself with how much you're able to perceive. And so try to connect. And, you know, I maybe we'll end it with like a quick little meditation on how someone could possibly start this practice.
Sure.
So, you know, you can sit up nice and tall in a chair and start connecting down into your feet flat on the floor, how it feels to spread your toes out wide. And then take a deep breath imagine the breath filling your body all the way up into your toes. And then as you exhale, your feet sink a little deeper into the ground, your hips settle into your chair. And on your next inhale, your spine feels nice and long, like a rod connecting from your tailbone all the way up into the crown of your head. And you breathe all the way through your tailbone. Let the air fill up your belly and then exhale through the nose, blow it out. And so we work our way up using the breath to connect to each part of our body, tapping into the feet, base of the spine, breathing into your belly button, feeling it stack on top of your tailbone, still feeling like a rod pulling up all the way through your spine as you breathe into your chest and your heart. And then exhaling all the way down, connecting your heart over your belly button, over your tailbone, over your feet, letting that sink down. And then this time, inhaling all the way into your fingertips, imagining that breath filling your whole body all the way through your heart, down to your feet. And imagine your shoulders relaxing away from your ears, your neck feeling nice and long. Imagine the air flowing through your throat into your lungs, filling up the space. Stacking your lungs over your heart, over your belly button, and your tailbone, breathing out through your feet. Bring your hands to connect palm to palm over your heart. And then slightly bowing your chin, imagining the space right in between your eyes, deep into your brain, and breathing into that space all the way down into your belly, and then exhaling out all the way through into your feet. and then connecting to the top of the crown of your head, like that rod going all the way through your spine, down to your tailbone, taking a deep breath into the body, and then exhaling out through the nose. So that's just a way of like stacking your awareness through the base of your body, all the way through those energy points into the crown of your head, and being able to slowly go through each of those spaces and see what it feels like to connect and breathe into that part of your body helps connect the breath, the body, the mind, and eventually adding those layers in of the spirit of like, huh, how does it feel when I get to the breath in my belly? Is it tight? Is it hard to breathe into that space? What am I holding there? What am I holding onto in my shoulders, in my throat, you know, and just like slowly peeling back those layers and how they're connected. Eventually, it becomes easier to connect into that energy and that space and just being present. And so once you cultivate that for a little bit of time every day, it becomes a little bit easier to sink into that field or that source energy.
Yeah, I'm going to start incorporating that into my meditation. Oftentimes I've been doing guided meditation, but I might switch that up a little bit and try to become more sensitive to these energy fields that you've introduced me to. So thank you very much. I think also that breath, I think, is a great way for especially square breathing to help patients just calm down and tap into their parasympathetic nervous system. I think so many of the patients that are coming off the streets in chronic pain, they're in fight or flight, freeze or faint, their sympathetics are all wrapped up. And when they come to see you, I think doing that deep breathing exercise, maybe even the square breathing, creates that space of calm and peace and more awareness with their body. And so I think that the breath, I think that's a very privileged way of entry into the person's body.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the foundation, is the breath. It's like the thing that flows through us, that like our vital life force and our integrated nervous system, like the breath is the way to tap into that.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, Madison, thank you very much for your time this morning on this beautiful Saturday, August 12th morning. Do you have any plugs that you would like to make?
Let's see. If anyone is interested in learning more about Reiki or, you know, what it means to tap into those alternate healing modalities such as herbalism and embodiment practices and how to tie those things together. Like, I'm an open book. I love to chat about those things. I'd love to share resources or answer any questions that people have. You can find me at Instagram at @a_hollow_bone, a hollow bone. Or email me. I'm sure Ben can like link my email in the.
Yeah. I'll link your Instagram and your email in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So yeah, thanks again, Madison, for your time. And it was a great conversation, very enlightening. It will enrich my practice for sure. And I'm sure it will enrich the listeners' practice as well. So thanks again.
Absolutely. And I do want to have one more plug to MSU NMM department. I'm currently doing an elective there as a fourth year med student, which is how I connected with Ben, Dr. Green. And so it's been a great experience as a Southern Louisiana gal coming up to Michigan for the summer. It's a nice reprieve. So definitely recommend it to anyone who's interested in osteopathic manipulative medicine and learning a bit more about it, because there's so many great clinicians to learn from and a variety of experiences. I feel really at home. So it's great to be here.
Yeah, we enjoy having you in our clinic. So thanks again, Madison. Enjoy your weekend of relaxation and sunshine.
Absolutely. You too.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Bye.
Bye. Bye. I hope you enjoyed this conversation, and hopefully it opened you up to the possibility of another dimension of which to look at the person. Humans are fascinating and quite complex. The more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. If you would like to reach out to Madison, you may at madison.e.lambert@gmail.com or on Instagram at a_hollow_bone. And we will see you in the next episode.